As Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, prepares to leave China, we could be seeing a breakthrough in the diplomatic crisis caused by the dissident Chen Guangcheng when he escaped house arrest there. The Chinese government has announced that Chen can apply to study outside of China. That would perhaps give the Chinese officials an opportunity to save face, allow Chen and his family to leave China in the same manner that they allow thousands of Chinese students to do every single year. Speaking just in the past hour in Beijing, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton says there is progress being made.
Today, our ambassador has spoken with him again. Our embassy staff and our doctor had a chance to meet with him, and he confirms that he and his family now want to go to the United States so he can pursue his studies.
Joining us now, P.J. Crowley, former Assistant Secretary of State for Public Affairs and now a professor at George Washington University. It's good to talk to you again, P.J.
Blessed, how are you?
I'm doing well. You know, there's been a lot of criticism from the Obama administration for how they've handled this and for Secretary of State Clinton as well. It's expected from the Republicans, but human rights activists say they haven't done as much as they could. Do you think that's fair?
I don't. I mean, first of all, we don't know the end of the story. We've seen many twists and turns over the past couple of days. And as you just said, there appears to be at least the framework of some kind of arrangement where he will be able to travel once he gets a passport and applies for a visa. And then obviously what happens beyond that will be up to him. He was trying to do something that was really unique, and he still may be interested in doing something that's very unique. We've had a long history of moving dissidents from China, safely to the United States. Chen wanted to continue his activism inside China. And obviously that's something that is complicated and difficult, and we probably haven't seen the last twist and turn in the story.
Why is it? Help for those who don't understand really either the Chinese government or the diplomatic relationship between the U.S. and China. Why are we getting so many back and forth, so many changes of mind? Why does Chen keep saying, I want to change, stay in China, I want to leave China? Why do we keep getting so many differing stories?
Well, there's a fundamental lack of trust here from Chen with respect to his government, totally understandable. China has a horrible record of human rights. There is a fundamental agree-to-disagree equation here. The United States does stress human rights in its broad and complex relationship with China. China's view is that issues between the government and its citizens are nobody's business but China's. So they obviously, over the years, while China is a different country than it was 20 years ago, there is a larger public space than there has been before. It certainly does not meet international standards of human rights or fundamental freedoms that we take for granted.
We're getting a little bit of roughness on the line. That's P.J. Crowley, former Assistant Secretary of State for Public Affairs, now a professor at George Washington University. Let's take a listen. Jay, if you could play cut number 3 for us. This is Hillary Clinton speaking again.
This is not just about well-known activists. It's about the human rights and aspirations of more than a billion people here in China and billions more around the world.
And again, I should emphasize that before, this is the first time that Hillary Clinton has actually mentioned Chen by name when she's made a comment about this. This all began when Chen Guangcheng escaped from house arrest right before the annual talks between the U.S. and China. And PJ, I wonder if you could speak to exactly what Hillary Clinton is saying there. She seems to be drawing parallels with the broader human rights situation in China. Do you think she's seeing an opportunity to really affect change because of the change in leadership in China?
Well, change in China will come from within China. But certainly what Hillary Clinton did before coming to Beijing for what's called the Strategic and Economic Dialogue is put down a very clear public marker that the Chen case and human rights are important and are a key pillar in the relationship. And then there was a very intense but lengthy but respectful negotiation between the United States and China over Chen's fate, what to do, what he wanted to do. And I think what we've seen is the tension that exists within China on these issues. The United States negotiated with the foreign ministry, not the most powerful agency within the Chinese government. Once Chen left the embassy, obviously you've seen the security forces take over, and now there's kind of a rebalancing because China does care about its international image. And they are trying to manage this, but obviously within very clear constraints, you know, where they do fundamentally fear their own people. And you know, change will come to China, I think, but it's going to take time. And there are always going to be fits and starts in this.
I wonder, and I don't mean to bring up a Star Trek reference, but I wonder if this was a bit of a Kobayashi Maru situation, a no-win situation in which for the Chinese and the United States, at least, and possibly for Chen, because this came up at a time when they were having these annual talks, there was no way for anyone to come out of this really on top.
Well, I would say that the, obviously dropping the Chen case into the middle of a sensitive time. You've got the SNED. China is going through its own presidential transition. Hu Jintao the next year will cede power, to Xi Jinping. And also, China has this embarrassing case of Wang Jiulai, a leading figure in the Chinese government. But now he and his family are accused of corruption and potentially responsibility for the death of a British citizen. So it's a complicated issue. I mean, the relationship between the United States and China will be complex and difficult on a good day. And so I think that these tensions will play themselves out. But I think in this case, the limelight will work effectively for Chen. However, those who helped him escape from house arrest, make his way to Beijing and into the embassy, the Chinese government will be severely dealing with those people.
So I'm not going to ask you to make a prediction, but are your bets on the fact that Chen will end up studying in the U.S.?
Chen will study in the U.S. in my view, but obviously China will continue the crackdown that it is currently undergoing with respect to human rights. It's got a long way to go.
P.J. Crowley, former Assistant Secretary of State for Public Affairs, now a professor at George Washington University. Thanks.
Okay, Celeste.
You got to give him this. That self-taught lawyer blind kid in China sure plays a mean diplomatic pinball. Let's recap here. Chen Guangchen, utterly unknown a few weeks ago, engineered an escape from house arrest in Guangdong province, makes his way to the U.S. Embassy in Beijing, now driving U.S.-Chinese relations. Once again, hear his voice as it was heard live on a historic cell phone in the halls of the U.S. Congress yesterday. Translating and actually holding that cell phone for Mr. Chen was fellow activist Bob Fu, who established the U.S.-based nonprofit China Aid after going into exile in 1996. He actually helped Mr. Chen escape from his house arrest.
Hundreds of thousands of Chen Guangtong are still inside China fighting for their freedom. You talk about petitioners, you talk about other human rights lawyers, freedom fighters, and really some even normal Chinese citizens. If they persist, and at least they can have partial victory.
Is there a new generation of Chinese dissidents attempting to hijack the system they believed was hijacked a long time ago by the Communist Party? Bob Fu, who we spoke with, says the idea of reform in the China of 2012 is simply absurd.
Currently, I think the political environment and the Bush-led fallout, I don't think the reformers have any chance to move forward, even they wanted to. I don't think in the very near future China will become a free country with rule of law.
With us once again now is Jonathan Fenby, managing editor of the China team for research and consultancy firm Trusted Sources. Latest book on China is called Tiger Head, Snake Tales, China Today. So we learned from U.S. officials, Jonathan, that Chen Guangchen has a fellowship to study in the United States. But I'm wondering, can you even study Chinese law in the United States? It's such an unusual system.
Oh, you can indeed. I mean, there's some eminent, Jerry Cohen, for instance, who's been involved in this case, is a very eminent expert on Chinese law based in the United States. So, yes, you can do it.
All right. Well, that's good to know. Then comment on how this relates to the Bo Xi Lai fallout. You mentioned it briefly a moment ago. It seems to me what you're describing here is a new generation of dissidents who actually want to use the system rather than throw it out. Is Chen Guangcheng just the beginning here?
Well, there are quite a few human rights lawyers in China who are trying to use the system, trying to apply the law. They're not political lawyers, these. These are on social issues mainly, housing, the forced sterilizations, which Chen was representing people over. The problem with that is that in the end, the law is there. It's written down. There's a constitution. It's written down, but it's not applied. And the law has always been in China a very, very political matter manipulated by those in power. This isn't just the Communist Party. This goes way back to the first emperor 2,500 years ago, who adopted what is called legalism, which means using the law to scare everybody, to get them to comply by making them terrified.
Is there an extent, though, to which social media raises an awareness of what is on the books versus what the government does with the law, and that you will see a reaction to this kind of fundamental hypocrisy on the rule of law in China that will complicate matters and make this a very different outcome, perhaps?
Well, you could be right there, John. I mean, the advent of social media in China has changed a lot of things in the whole relationship, if you like, between citizens and those in authority has changed because people can send around SMSs, text messages, chat away, Chinese equivalent of Twitter, and so on. And that does make control very difficult. And you have now what are called, and I deal with this in my book again, what are called human flesh searches. It sounds pretty horrible in China. And this is groups of netizens, people going on the net and identifying officials who are misbehaving and then launching huge campaigns against them. And in some cases, they've been successful and the officials have been punished.
It's a gigantic 21st century story of you can fight City Hall, even in Beijing, with these tools of social media. Is this how Chinese citizens are learning about this story, not from the mainstream media, but from these tweets and blogs and very difficult to control exchanges of information?
Yes, that's it, absolutely. And, you know, if you look, the official media are not going to touch this story except putting out the official Chinese government line on it. But people will be talking about it, not as much perhaps actually in China as outside China at the moment because of the controls. Always remember that all media in China, or nearly all media, are controlled by the state and therefore ultimately by the Communist Party.
Although, you know, it's never all media in the perfect sense. If we think back to Tiananmen Square, remember the large character posters that people would put up on the walls in Tiananmen Square? Impromptu media, it's happening again.
It's happening. And there are some very brave journalists in China, too, who they walk a very fine line all the time, but who are pretty outspoken. And in the clip just now, there was talk of reform. I would be slightly more optimistic. I think there is a reform debate going on in China at the moment. It's primarily economic because that's safe. Politics are not safe in China. And the really crucial question is whether the new generation of communist leaders who take over at the end of this year will decide that a certain measure of reform is necessary if they're to preserve the power of the Communist Party.
We've heard a lot of terminology about details in China, Bo Xi Lai being one example, of course, Chen Guangcheng being another. Bob Fu, the activist who you heard there, referred to something called the Wuhan Village controversy. What's going on there?
That was end of last year. It was a village in Guangdong province in the south of China where there was a dispute over land which had been requisitioned by officials for a development away from farmers. And the farmers rose in protest. One of them was beaten to death. But then the villagers cut the village off, more or less, from the surrounding region and ran it almost as an autonomous place for several weeks. And then the Guangdong government, which is led by one of the rising stars of Chinese politics, basically reached a settlement with them. And the protest leaders are now village chiefs.
Amazing stuff. Way beyond diplomatic pinball, I'd say. Jonathan Fenby, thanks so much. Jonathan Fenby is an expert on China. His latest book is called Tiger Head, Snake Tales, China Today.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.